build stuff and operate stuff. So the attitude here is very much get it done, no BS, very, very much driven by engineers.
We had a belief in where lithium was going.
And lithium really played into my overall theory about my dad and his job, because I think I always have told people, yeah, my dad works in the lithium industry, like batteries and antidepressants. Like, that is my line.
You're listening to the Global Lithium Podcast.
It's Joe Lowry. Welcome to another edition of the Global Lithium Podcast. My guest today is Gene Morgan, the CEO of Brine Field Services Company, Zalandez. This is episode 75 of the podcast, and we started this about 3 years ago. Zalandez is a little bit older than the podcast, but from the early days, Gene has partnered with us to sponsor the podcast, and I appreciate that relationship, but that's not really why I'm having him as a guest today. I really want to find out more about the services that Zalandez provides and the value it provides to lithium explorers, developers, and producers. Gene and I both started our careers in the oil business. Zalandez is bringing some of the technology common in the oil industry to the lithium industry. And I think that's going to be a great benefit, as there is such pressure and will be more and more pressure going forward to bring brine projects on in a timely and efficient manner. So without further ado, Gene Morgan. Gene, welcome to the podcast, and let's get started with the backstory.
Okay, well, thanks, Joe, for inviting me on. It's an honor. But, you know, my backstory is I'm originally from New Zealand. I finished a mechanical engineering degree there, and then I went off and spent 10 years working on oil rigs across Europe. And Zalandez came about. I guess you could say it's really a story of love and Joe. I mean, it's not as fascinating as that it sounds, but if I look back, I came to my lithium fork in the road around the middle of 2008. And at that time, I'd been working on a project in Chad, when unfortunately the situation turned for the worst. They had some rebel fighting that was going on. They were trying to overtake the capital in N'Djamena, and so we were forced to evacuate. And I actually ended up in Rio de Janeiro on a training course as kind of a bit of a recovery period. And I was just about to head back to Africa, and a colleague in Bolivia rang me up and asked me if I'd come across to do a job, a seismic job actually, at the foot of the Andes. And it was on this trip where I met my wife, and also had my first trip to Salado Uyuni, which I think both left quite strong impressions on. And you'll remember, actually, at that time, they'd just rolled out the first Tesla Roadster. So there was quite a bit of press around the future of EVs and, you know, where the lithium was going to come from. And I think forwarding to 2015, and I'm now living in Bolivia, and the VW Dieselgate scandal has just hit. And it really highlighted to me, you know, the tough situation that car companies, you know, trying to keep up with these emissions regulations. I saw it as a, you know, it's like a red carpet moment for EVs and lithium as an extension. And I think the writing on the wall for me was there, that, you know, lithium was fast approaching as the future. And I think it was about that time actually when I reached out to you, and you were very gracious with your time and your advice. So I thank you again for that. And I founded, you know, Zalandez in 2016. Initially with the idea of tailoring oil field technologies and techniques to explore and produce lithium brine from the salars of Argentina, Bolivia, and Chile.
I think the first time we talked on Skype, 4 or 5 years ago. And that's when we had our first interaction. And then, as I recall, the first time we met face-to-face was in Santiago in 2017. I think I was with the LAC guys in the bar at the W, maybe, or something like that.
If my
memory serves. Well, this is very interesting to me because I started my career in the oil business, not on the technical side, but I firmly believed when I got into lithium that ultimately the lithium industry would be greatly enhanced by bringing oil field mentality and technology to both exploration and production. Although to somebody who drills a 20,000 foot deep gas well, what you have to do in lithium doesn't really seem, it seems like child's play. But so what is it that Zoandis is actually doing for people, and how can they add value to both on the exploration side and for existing operations?
Yeah. So we're a technology services company. So, you know, we're focused on understanding and aiding, you know, the journey of the brine from its origin beneath the salad surface to the door of the carbonate or hydroxide plant. And that journey is largely a challenge of engineering and geoscience, you know, which is why our team is made of engineers, geologists, hydrogeologists, petrophysicists. But our main service is downhole geophysical logging, which is about getting the data to answer the big questions a lithium brine explorer or producer has around, you know, where are the aquifer or aquifers that I want to produce the high-grade brine from? How should we be designing and completing our production wells? And also, you know, why is my brine well underproducing? You know, how can I produce produce more brine in a shorter time frame at less costs? So, you know, thinking about the production of brine from the well field in a more data-based way, it's a very important first step, I think, you know, to having a highly productive brine operation. And what we're seeing is that currently there's a lot of low-hanging fruit in terms of productivity gains to be had. You know, investing the same level, as you say, same level of importance that in the design and engine of the well field as an oil and gas operator invests in designing an oil field or developing a conventional oil field in oil and gas. We think a lot of that mentality can be utilized going forward, and there's a lot of productivity gains to be had there.
Let me just ask you a couple other nuances on that. I mean, when you first started talking to lithium explorers and producers, what was your feeling on the state of technology that was being deployed? Obviously, you saw a market opportunity, but what really, once you got into it, where did you see the aspects where, you know, you thought, well, okay, I can really make a difference here?
Yeah, I guess coming in, you know, the first impression coming into the industry, lithium brine, talking about here, the impression was that it's an industry in its infancy. It's been around, it's been operating since many decades, but really the focus was increasing, and the idea that production that we, you know, you had to get to battery grade production was becoming very important, which was a challenge in itself. So what I saw was you got a range of clients who are all on a learning curve. You have junior clients who are typically actually hard rock mining experienced clients, you know, coming from a hard rock mining background. And then you've got the producers who are actually predominantly, you know, specialty chemicals companies, almost trying to become miners, you know, having to learn the mining part of it. Everyone is on the learning curve, including ourselves. So there's prime opportunity to bring new ideas, new technologies, and really the way of exploring and producing brine is still largely based on, you know, experience from hard rock conventional mining, which is not always the most efficient. You know, there are methods that are well proven, for example, in oil and gas, specifically around, you know, downhole geophysics, which really are a staple part of exploring and producing an oil field. You can't do without it. So that's kind of what we've been introducing. Had a lot of gains from that, improvement in productivity, reduction in costs. And we think that'll increase going forward as clients start to see the benefits.
Have you had any trouble at all when you go into a client
and you can say, okay, this is where you are and this is where we can take you. But is quantifying your value relatively simple, or is it, well, that might have happened anyway? And I mean, you know, it's not always a clear road to, there's so many interactive variables in these things. How do you say, well, okay, we saved X percent, or this is how we demonstrate our value and you know, continue to provide value to a client?
Yeah. So I guess the clear example is that we actually, for example, on our downhole geophysics, you know, what we're doing is providing more data to make better decisions and in a fast manner. So downhole data about the subsurface, the aquifer, how you want to finish the production well in order to get the most brine out of that well, a liter per second. So you've got a measurement there, liter per second, which you can easily compare against production wells, which you've previously drilled without that information. And you can do see the comparison on the same salat. So that's one way. But then also by using these services, these data services, you can actually move to a cheaper form of drilling. So typically what has happened historically in the industry is that there's a lot of diamond drilling, which is this type of drilling to basically take a core and you send the core to the US labs to get analyzed for all the properties that you need to know to do the resource estimate and how you're going to develop that resource. We're able to basically give them the same type of information so that they don't have to use this expensive drilling. They can move to a less expensive drilling, which is called rotary drilling, and not kind of avoid the excessive use of this of diamond drilling and sending cores to the US, which is hugely expensive. And also the time frame, you know, to get that, the turnaround time of getting that information back, it's in the months, you know. We can give them data within 24 hours of going to the wells.
It's really interesting because I've talked to, in the last 3 years, I've talked to five or six of the major oil companies. And honestly, maybe it's just the groups within the oil companies I'm talking to, but it doesn't seem to, the light doesn't seem to go on that actually this, some of this work isn't different than what you've always done. And it's probably a lot easier. If you were going to take a look at a greenfield brine project and be in there from the beginning, what's your sense of, in very rough terms, how you could speed the project up from beginning to end time-wise? And then because you're able to save them money on the drilling side, what kind of reduction in capital costs is possible? Again, all these projects are different, but I'm just trying to get a sense from what really is the ultimate value proposition and how does the land has become the Schlumberger of the lithium business?
Yeah. And we never say we're coming in and replacing things, conventional methods. We're always complementary to any project. But I think, yeah, in general, where I see technology is really applying new technologies, I think is a lever to speed up projects and also bring down the operating costs and also the capex costs. I mean, that we see that in many industries. So in terms of how fast you can speed it up, I mean, I'd be just guessing to say that. But what I do know is that the expected timeframes we see now to bring a project online, I think that can be reduced. You know, a lot of that has to do with the process of going through the feasibility studies and the process of getting that project certified. But then if you look and you compare that to the likes of, you know, like a POSCO or a client that is funded, they don't have a need to prove to the world how big their resources or they can just, you know, they fast track into production because they need to get their production to supply their plant.
Yeah, well, so that's interesting. This whole 43-101 requirement was totally new to me because the people who were in the lithium industry when I got in the lithium industry weren't juniors. And I mean, when we were first doing Hombre Muerto at FMC, it was like, we'll be dead when that lithium's gone. So who cares? I mean, there was just a whole different vibe about this whole resource bit and proving it out. So it's amazing. I'd been in the industry for almost a quarter of a century when I started doing what I'm doing now, but I've probably learned more sense than I did before, just because this industry is undergoing great change. And I just kind of like to get your thinking on, you know, it wasn't much longer before we first talked that most people, even in the industry, believed that the Atacama and live events operation in Hombre Muerto and then Greenbushes along with conversion could do all the lithium that you'd need in any kind of foreseeable future. I mean, there were a lot of people that believed once the Atacama started, why would anybody else get into this business? And now we see that the Atacama's struggling to rapidly expand. I mean, both Albemarle and SQM have had their issues. You don't have just Greenbushes and WA. You got several other mines operating. And we're still at a third of the supply that we're going to need just 4 or 5 years from today. So how do you see your place? I mean, obviously, there's a lot more potential clients for you because there's a lot of resources that are going to have to open up. And where do you see the biggest opportunity? And given the industry's vacillated back and forth, in my generation, it was once brine started, it was all brine's all that matters. Greenbushes will probably still limp along, but you don't really need hard rock. Now you've got a whole different change because carbonate has to also, you also have to have hydroxide in addition to carbonate. Hard rock's a much more competitive route when you're going the hydroxide way. But Brian, you're still going to need, let's say, 10 world-class brine operations to come on in the next 7 years. And that doesn't seem to be happening. So I'd like your perspective on how you see this playing out. And then also on South America, Bolivia has been the lithium source of the future that seemingly always will be. What do you see happening there? How do you see you potentially impacting Chile? It's a lot of questions in one question. And then Argentina's got a lot more smaller solars, but how do you see brine development playing out in South
America? Yeah, I see it. It has to speed up. I think we're in agreement that the first step is really funding. From where I sit, that is the main limiting factor, let's say, in getting this ball rolling properly. Without the funding, projects kind of drift along, waiting for that next tranche to come in, because a lot of it is still exploration. You know, the majority of projects are exploration in this part, and they survive on their next tranche of money. And if that doesn't come in, then they have to kind of go in a holding pattern until that does come in. So that really limits and slows down the process. If the money comes in, then I think, you know, just generally speaking, I think the trend is that, you know, naturally there'll be bigger and bigger incentives for producers to improve the technology in the well field, especially, you know, as the lithium market moves towards larger and larger volumes. And so with that improved competition, let's call it, you can start driving down the costs of the operation, driving down the capex of the operation, but also the operating costs, which then incentivizes more investment in newer projects, I think. But it also helps with the production and the consistency of the end product, which is important at the end of the day, because part of the issue is that the producers are struggling to maintain the battery quality. So they're going to be less inclined to venture outside of their main producing project and invest in these other projects, these other developing projects, even exploration. I see it as a complete ecosystem in terms of you need the juniors to take on the risk profile, you know, for exploring the resource to start with and getting it to a certain stage. Then you need a medium player to come in, you know, take over with better funding, better balance sheet, and then the bigger players eventually will come in when it's been de-risked in their eyes. Without that system working properly, then projects will be stalled, you know, taking forever to come online.
Well, when you look at Zalanda's opportunities, to the extent that you're dealing with juniors, that must put a lot more risk on you trying to plan this year and next year because, yeah, we're going to do this, this, and this, but if the next transfer financing doesn't come in, nothing's going to happen until it does. So how complex has that made your business run?
Yeah, I mean, right now, it is a mixed bag of you know, the ability to operate and service. I mean, right now we do have, you know, the juniors who are almost all in a holding pattern waiting for the macro situation to change. And then you've got the developers, the projects that are developing towards production, who are funded. They seem to be their operations seem to be turning over, slight delays, but still turning over. And then you've got producers who are trying to avoid, especially with COVID, they're actually limiting their operations to mainly, production centered activities. So avoiding the rest of the development activities, because the risk to them of their project COVID outbreak causing production to shut down is too high. So right now there is a lot of uncertainty. I mean, the next 6 to 12 months is really it's a chilled view as to how this is going to play out, whether the projects come back online when they should. I mean, we have a pipeline of work, but when that actually plays out is the big question. And I think it's the same for our clients. They're taking a very cautious view on how things pick back up again.
Well, I found it interesting that in the last week, Albemarle reported, LiveEnt reported, and it's a tough year. We'll see if it's dead level with last year, or slightly up or slightly down. Even though we're in August, it's still pretty hard to know. But you have particularly Albemarle saying, well, we still see 1 million tons needed in 2025. To me, they've backed off their timetable. They're the biggest lithium company, and they've backed off their timetable for development. And actually, I think if you can get through the pain of the next 12 to 18 months, this is the best news you could have, because price is going to spike. And let's say 2022, and you're going to go back to the vibe when you first entered this industry, say 2016, when it was Katie bar the door, hydroxide was selling for over $28,000 a ton in the non-contract business. And then, we'll see a real rush. I'm having a lot of conversations with people with really good balance sheets that could basically buy this industry in one fell swoop. But everybody's kind of like wanting to come in at the perfect moment. So, yeah, I mean, every time I've seen you, you got a smile on your face. I think you need to just keep smiling, because I think you're going to go through some pain. But hopefully, ultimately, for you, have you had conversations? Have any potential investors sought you out to get your perspective on the industry?
Yeah, I mean, I've had conversations with that want to better understand the lithium portion, because it is of the supply chain. It is it's still opaque, It's still, unless you're on the inside, it's confusing for many as to what goes on and how to predict things, how it's going to play out. Me personally, I see it. It's nothing new for, in terms of this kind of boom and bust mentality.
You're an oil guy.
yeah, coming from oil, that's part and parcel of an extractive industry, But it is we will see an extreme, I think, of that. I mean, we are seeing extreme of that now.
Well, you're too young to remember this. You probably read the history, but I started in the oil business in the beginning of 1985, just before the Saudis decided that they weren't going to be the swing producer anymore. And West Texas Intermediate went from, we were getting $32-$33. It went to under $9 in a heartbeat. And almost every oil company in Oklahoma City, Denver, Houston laid off 25-30% of their workforce like that. So yeah, I've been through it, and I think it's good that you've been through some of that too, because it takes some thick skin to do what you're doing. And I think an oil education is probably the best education you could possibly have. Let me ask you about the changing technology. I mean, we hear a lot now about DLE, and you see, you're in Argentina, you've got people that are talking about implementing DLE. And we can debate whether what LiveEnt does is DLE or not. We never called it DLE until it recently became cool and they started using that term. But how do you feel about those kind of changes? And does that change what, if you have true DLE implementation, how does that change what Zoandis does?
Yeah, I think, I mean, my view on DLE is, looking forward 5 to 10 years, I think we will see more projects that have a DLE process. And I think more than anything, you know, the DLE is an important optionality for some projects. It's not a replacement for the conventional method. As you know, Joe, that this processing, lithium brine production processing, is not cookie cutter development. You know, every brine chemistry requires a different setup. So, you know, I don't think it will be a case of everyone using DLE, but I also see the possibility that there might be tandem projects where you have a DLE process, you know, running alongside, let's say, a conventional pond setup. That's a possibility. There's definitely going to be winners and losers. There's a plethora of DLE companies developing technologies, but not all of them will survive, and a lot of them will obviously have technical difficulties, I think. At the end of the day, I'm not a DLE expert, nor are we getting into DLE, but what we are developing is specific knowledge around reinjection, because we think reinjecting the spent brine back into the salad after it goes through a DLE process, you know, we think that's integral to any DLE project, because it appears to be the most logical way to deal with the large quantities of this spent brine, which you've got to manage. You know, it's a disposal issue that you've got to manage. And you know, if you compare it to a conventional setup, pond setup, that doesn't, you're basically evaporating that brine to atmosphere. You don't have that issue, but with a DLE process, you do. You've got this, you've got to do something with that brine.
Yeah. One of my first jobs was keeping track of the salt water disposal wells in Oklahoma and Arkansas. That was just part of what I had to do. And, you know, it's ironic now that you got a lithium operation that's basically part of the old oil field in the El Dorado area. So, you know, this is an interesting time. I won't belabor the DLE point. It's just talked about so much now. Yeah. Totally agree with what you said, and it's what I've tried to say about it. I'm not for it or against it. I think whatever happens, if you have a path forward, it's a supplement to what currently happens. And it can, done properly, I believe it can make some potential resources viable that wouldn't otherwise be, because they don't have the evaporation characteristics to move forward economically. But we'll see. We've already touched on it a little bit, but how has COVID changed what you guys are doing on a daily basis? And I don't want to get it, we don't have to totally belabor this, but I find it interesting how different people have reacted to COVID. Argentina's obviously, it's impacted just about, if you take something like what's happened in Jujuy, it's definitely slowing things down. But how do you see the response? Give me your best guess on a return to normalcy.
Yeah, as I said, it's a mixed bag. There's been, depending on the client and the phase the phase they're in, whether that be exploration, development, or production, they've taken different approaches. The mining sector was, you know, talking about Argentina, you know, there was a lockdown early on, even including mining. And then that eventually got lifted because mining was part of the critical industries. But the projects that came back, they came back in varied ways. So, you know, the likes of LAC and the development projects, even POSCO, Galaxy, I believe, they came, you know, they were able to get back into operations fairly smartly and continue as normal. But then the producers were more, I guess, less inclined to rapidly ramp up back to what they had been doing pre-COVID. So that's been going on, you know, playing out over the last few months. But right now, and obviously that's obviously had an effect on us, because limited our ability to get to site, because we're more, our services are more around the development, exploration and development of the well field. And so if those activities aren't happening, then obviously we're affected. In saying that, we're starting to see now even the producers start to get back to normalcy. So we think in the next month or two that will carry out, you know, that will play out, and which is good. You know, I think industry realizes that, hey, they've got some catching up to do, and there's no point in belaboring this too much. And I think that's a sentiment actually that's also, it's not just the mining industry. I think in general there's a sentiment with the population, you know. There's a bit of capitulation going on. You know, whether this the heavy lockdowns are actually achieving anything, if the cases are still going up. That's a big question that's out there, and I think people are just getting a bit tired of having to restrict their lives and the economic pain that it's causing. So I think it's heading in a general direction like that.
Yeah, I just want to go back to Bolivia for a minute. And obviously there's a lot of lithium underneath the crust in Bolivia. And this whole narrative that there was a CIA/Elon Musk plot to take that lithium, which is extremely comical. But you're living in Bolivia. Obviously, you're close to it. You talked about that at the beginning of, seeing this Salar de Uyuni. And so what is your hope for the future of lithium in Bolivia?
Yeah, I think Bolivia will eventually, I'm hopeful that Bolivia will eventually step into the role that we're all expecting it to fulfill. The country, it's got to move past the political stalemate that's going on right now. The country is in an interim government at the moment. We're expecting elections in October. And hopefully once those elections are over and the next administration is in, then that will be, there will be some guidance for the state company, because actually, as you know, it's YLB is the state company operating the project here. They need, that gives them some guidance on moving things forward. I think that's it in a nutshell at the moment. The political situation doesn't bode well for YLB and their ability to move the project forward.
Let me ask you one other question about the services that you provide. I mean, one of the challenges, particularly in the Puna, is having enough fresh water to run your carbonate operation. The whole water discussion is really complicated because it's mischaracterized quite often. But does what you do help identify the water reserves? Because, if you're going to put $500 million in the ground to develop a lithium resource, and you got lithium for 30 years and you got water for 15. Looking at your website, you talk about a little bit about water services, but what do you play a role in helping people to determine their water supply?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the question of whether water is being impacted or fresh water is being impacted off the side has got a lot of limelight. The water impacts in general, and I think the question needs more data to start with. I think part of the issue is that there's not conclusive data that's saying yes or no, water is being indirectly affected. I think we can say directly affected, we have a good, there's a good grasp on directly affected, but indirectly, meaning, the interactions that are going on down underneath the salad from production, is that causing impacts on the water, on freshwater resources off the salad? That's still a question I think needs to be answered conclusively. And that's really a question of data. Having the data, we actually focus on another service we do is providing permanent well monitoring solutions, which is around using permanent surface sensors, and then also surface sensors or downhole sensors in the wells to monitor the aquifers and the production and measure the behavior of the production over time. And so through this, you're able to pull out insights about what's actually happening with production over time, how the aquifers are reacting, and doing that on almost a real-time basis. I think that's going to be important to really managing the whole salad going forward and being able to adjust production based on the effects you see going on below surface.
And let me follow up with one question about, I know you're doing a lot of work in Argentina, but what kind of opportunity does Chile represent for you?
Chile's one of our, one of our main opportunities. Obviously, we've got our setup in Chile. We're operating on the Atacama, and it's an important player going forward. We intend to be there quite strongly.
All right, and that leads into my "where is the land is in 5 years" question.
So in 5 years, we intend to be a more well-rounded service company. Going forward in 5 years. Continue on the path we are, which is about providing services for lithium brine clients, specifically with the well field, around the thing to do with taking brine from the salad, getting it to the plant door. There's many services in that pie that can be room for opportunity to bring productivity gains, and specifically around, again, applying technologies, techniques from other industries. There's a lot of cross innovation that can happen, which we intend to be on top of. And that's where we see it going.
Okay. Well, it's time for rapid fire. But first, before we do rapid fire, I just want to thank you for sponsoring the podcast. I had several lithium companies offer to sponsor the podcast, but I didn't want to feel that having a lithium company or a company you have some other kind of relationship with sponsor the podcast didn't make sense. And you guys were like kind of the perfect, you cross all lines, you're the friend of all. And so thank you. I appreciate it.
We're going to do three rapid fire questions. Nothing too difficult. So let's get started.
Favorite sport?
Rugby.
Okay. That's not a big shock.
I couldn't choose anything other.
Yeah, I didn't think you could. That's why I said it was an easy question. And I never saw a rugby match until I lived in Japan, because I lived in a building with a lot of all blacks who, when they get a little too long in the tooth, they go to Japan. Favorite movie?
Back to the Future.
If you could have dinner with anyone that's ever lived, we'll bring them back for you. Or if they're living now, we'll just hook you up. But who would you have dinner with and why?
I'd actually like to have dinner with Juan Manuel Fangio. I don't know if you know him. He's the Argentine Formula One driver, considered to be the best that ever lived. And I'd let him tell me about the race that they used to do, which was a race that started in Buenos Aires. It went up through the Andes, Bolivia, up to Lima, and then they turned around and came back. And so this was happening, 10,000 kilometers of a race happening in the 1940s, and the conditions and the cars, you can imagine.
Yeah.
That would be...
you needed a good mechanic.
Horrendous conditions. It would have been interesting.
Yeah. Okay, good answer. Yeah. All right. Well, Gene Morgan, thank you very much for being on the podcast. And I think this is going to be an interesting episode, because there are a lot of questions about brine, why it takes so long to bring brine on, and I think you're part of the answer. So I think this episode will do well.
Well, thanks, Joe. Again, thanks for having me, and hope the listeners can get something from this.
I'm absolutely sure they will.
Thanks for listening. Anybody who got this far and listens to the credits at the end is somebody that I'd like to do a favor for. So the first two people that get this far and go on to the globallithium.net website on the contact page and send me a request to do an Ask Me Anything will get an Ask Me Anything, half an hour, a Zoom call where we can talk about any lithium industry question or any other question you have if you want my opinion on. And with that, I will just say, do not let your memories exceed your dreams.